although she might be the only human alive who could recall Sheba as a reality. The deep compulsions had been designed with care, and for a long time after Lita had gone, Ganima reworked her self-awareness, building the lonely sister, the surviving twin, until it was a believable totality. As she did this, she found the inner world becoming silent, blanked away from intrusion into her consciousness. It was a side effect she had not expected. "If only Leto could have lived to learn this," she thought, and she did not find the thought a paradox. Standing, she peered down at the desert where the tiger had taken Leto. There was a sound growing in the sand out there, a familiar sound to Fremen, the passage of a worm. Rare as they had become in these parts, a worm still came. Perhaps the first cat's death throes? Yes, Leto had killed one cat before the other one got him. It was oddly symbolic that a worm should come. So deep was her compulsion that she saw three dark spots far down on the sand, the two tigers and Leto. Then the worm came, and there was only sand with its surface broken into new waves by the passage of Shai Hulud. It had not been a very large worm, but large enough, and her compulsion did not permit her to see a small figure riding on the ringed back. Fighting her grief, Ganima sealed her Fremkit, crept cautiously from her hiding place. Hand on her Mala pistol, she scanned the area. No sign of a human with a transmitter. She worked her way up the rocks and across to the far side, creeping through moon shadows, waiting and waiting to be sure no assassin lurked in her path. Across the open space, she could see torches at Tabor, the wavering activity of a search. A dark patch moved across the sand toward the attendant. She chose her path to run far to the north of the approaching party, went down to the sand, and moved into the dune shadows. Careful to make her steps fall in a broken rhythm which would not attract a worm, she set out into the lonely distance which separated Tabor from the place where Leto had died. She would have to be careful at the Khanat, she knew. Nothing must prevent her from telling how her brother had perished, saving her from the tigers.
Governments, if they endure, always tend increasingly toward aristocratic forms. No government in history has been known to evade this pattern. And as the aristocracy develops, government tends more and more to act exclusively in the interests of the ruling class. Whether that class be hereditary royalty, oligarchs of financial empires, or entrenched bureaucracy.
Politics as Repeat Phenomenon, Bene Gesserit Training Manual.
Why does he make us this offer? Faradin asked. That's most essential.
He and the Bashar Titanic stood in the lounge of Faradin's private quarters. Wenceslaus sat at one side on a low blue divan, almost as audience rather than participant. She knew her position and resented it, but Faradin had undergone a terrifying change since that morning when she'd revealed their plots to him. It was late afternoon at Carino Castle, and the low light accented the quiet comfort of this lounge, a room lined with actual books reproduced in plastino, with shelves revealing a hoard of player spools, data blocks, sugar wire reels, mnemonic amplifiers. There were signs all around that this room was much used, worn places on the books, bright metal on the amplifiers, frayed corners on the data blocks. There was only the one divan, but many chairs, all of them sensiform floaters designed for unobtrusive comfort. Faradin stood with his back to a window. He wore a plain Sardaukar uniform in gray and black, with only the golden lion claw symbols on the wings of his collar as decoration. He had chosen to receive the Bashar and his mother in this room, hoping to create an atmosphere of more relaxed communication than could be achieved in a more formal setting. But Titanic's constant, "My lord this," and "My lady that," kept them at a distance.
"My lord, I don't think he'd make this offer were he unable to deliver," Titanic said.
"Of course not," Wenceslia intruded.
Faradin merely glanced at his mother to silence her, asked,
"We've put no pressure on Idaho, made no attempt to seek delivery on the preacher's promise?"
"None,"
Titanic said.
"Then why does Duncan Idaho, noted all of his life for his fanatic loyalty to the Atreides, offer now to deliver the Lady Jessica into our hands?"
"These rumors of trouble on Arrakis," Wenceslia ventured.
"Unconfirmed," Faradin said. "Is it possible that the preacher has precipitated this?"
"Possible," Titanic said, "but I fail to see a motive."
"He speaks of seeking asylum for her," Faradin said. "That might follow if those rumors..."
"Precisely," his mother said. "Or it could be a ruse of some sort," Titanic said.
"We can make several assumptions and explore them," Faradin said. "What if Idaho has fallen into disfavor with his Lady Alia?"
"That might explain matters," Wenceslaus said,
But he... No word yet from the smugglers? Faradin interrupted.
Why can't we? Transmission is always slow in this season, Titanic said. And the needs of security?
Yes, of course, but still... Faradin shook his head. I don't like our assumption.
Don't be too quick to abandon it, Wencesia said. All of those stories about Alia and that priest, whatever his name is, Javid,
Faradin said.
But the man's obviously... He's been a valuable source of information for us, Wencesia said.
I was about to say that he's obviously a double agent, Faradin said.
How could he indict himself in this?
He's not to be trusted. There are too many signs. I fail to see them, she said.
He was suddenly angry with her denseness. Take my word for it, Mother. The signs are there. I'll explain later.
I'm afraid I must agree, Titanic said.
Wencesia lapsed into hurt silence. How dared they push her out of council like this? As though she were some light-headed fancy woman with no...
We mustn't forget that Idaho was once a Gola, Faradin said. The Tlaelaxu...
He glanced sidelong at Titanic.
That avenue will be explored, Titanic said.
He found himself admiring the way Faradin's mind worked, alert, questing, sharp. Yes, the Tlaelaxu, in restoring life to Idaho, might have planted a powerful barb in him for their own use.
But I failed to apprehend a Tlaelaxu motive, Faradin said. An investment in our fortunes, Titanic said. A small insurance for future favors?
Large investment, I'd call it, Faradin said.
Dangerous, Wencesia said.
Faradin had to agree with her. The Lady Jessica's capabilities were notorious in the Empire. After all, she'd been the one who'd trained Muad'Dib.
If it became known that we hold her, Faradin said. Yes, that'd be a two-edged sword, Titanic said. But it need not be known.
Let us assume, Faradin said, that we accept this offer. What's her value? Can we exchange her for something of greater importance?
Not openly, Wencesia said.
Of course not.
He peered expectantly at Titanic.
That remains to be seen, Titanic said.
Faradin nodded.
Yes, I think if we accept, we should consider the Lady Jessica as money banked for indeterminate use. After all, wealth doesn't necessarily have to be spent on any particular thing. It's just potentially useful. She'd be a very dangerous captive, Titanic said.
There is that to consider, indeed, Faradin said.
I'm told that her Bene Gesserit ways permit her to manipulate a person just by the subtle employment of her voice. Or her body, Wencesia said. Irulan once divulged to me some of the things she'd learned. She was showing off at the time, and I saw no demonstrations. Still, the evidence is pretty conclusive that Bene Gesserits have their ways of achieving their ends.
Were you suggesting, Faradin asked, that she might seduce me?
Wencesia merely shrugged.
I'd say she's a little old for that, wouldn't you? Faradin asked. With a Bene Gesserit, nothing certain, Titanic said.
Faradin experienced a shiver of excitement tinged with fear. Playing this game to restore House of Carino's high seat of power both attracted and repelled him. How attractive it remained, the urge to retire from this game into his preferred pursuits, historical research and learning the manifest duties for ruling here on Seleucus Secundus. The restoration of his Sardaukar forces was a task in itself, and for that job, Tyke was still a good tool. One planet was, after all, an enormous responsibility. But the Empire was an even greater responsibility, far more attractive as an instrument of power. And the more he read about Muad'Dib, Paul Atreides, the more fascinated Faradin became with the uses of power. As titular head of House Carino, heir of Shaddam IV, what a great achievement it would be to restore his line to the Lion Throne. He wanted that. He wanted it. Faradin had found that, by repeating this enticing litany to himself several times, he could overcome momentary doubts. Titanic was speaking,
And, of course, the Bene Gesserit teach that peace encourages aggressions, thus igniting war. The paradox of how did we get on this subject?
Faradin asked, bringing his attention back from the arena of speculation.
Why?
Wencesia said sweetly, having noted the wool-gathering expression on her son's face.
I merely asked if Tyke was familiar with the driving philosophy behind the sisterhood.
Philosophy should be approached with irreverence, Faradin said, turning to face Titanic.
In regard to Idaho's offer, I think we should inquire further. When we think we know something, that's precisely the moment when we should look deeper into the thing.
It will be done, Titanic said.
He liked this cautious streak in Faradin, but hoped it did not extend to those military decisions which required speed and precision. With seeming irrelevancy, Faradin asked,
Do you know what I find most interesting about the history of Arrakis? It was the custom in primitive times for Fremen to kill on sight anyone not clad in a stillsuit with its easily visible and characteristic hood. What is your fascination with the stillsuit? Titanic asked. So you've noticed, eh? How could we not notice? Wensicia asked. Faradin sent an irritated glance at his mother. Why did she interrupt like that? He returned his attention to Titanic. The stillsuit is the key to that planet's character, Tyke. It's the hallmark of Dune. People tend to focus on the physical characteristics. The stillsuit conserves body moisture, recycles it, and makes it possible to exist on such a planet. You know, the Fremen custom was to have one stillsuit for each member of a family, except for food gatherers. They had spares. But please note, both of you. He moved to include his mother in this. How garments which appear to be stillsuits, but really aren't, have become high fashion throughout the Empire. It's such a dominant characteristic for humans to copy the conqueror. Do you really find such information valuable? Titanic asked, his tone puzzled. Tyke, Tyke, without such information one cannot govern. I said the stillsuit was the key to their character, and it is. It's a conservative thing. The mistakes they make will be conservative mistakes. Titanic glanced at Wensicia, who was staring at her son with a worried frown. This characteristic of Faradin's both attracted and worried the Bashar. It was so unlike old Shaddam. Now there had been an essential Sardaukar, a military killer with few inhibitions. But Shaddam had fallen to the Atreides under that damnable Paul. Indeed, what he read of Paul Atreides revealed just such characteristics as Faradin now displayed. It was possible that Faradin might hesitate less than the Atreides over brutal necessities, but that was his Sardaukar training. Many have governed without using this kind of information, Titanic said. Faradin merely stared at him for a moment, then governed and failed. Titanic's mouth drew into a stiff line at this obvious allusion to Shaddam's failure. That had been a Sardaukar failure, too, and no Sardaukar could recall it easily. Having made his point, Faradin said, You see, Tyke, the influence of a planet upon the mass unconscious of its inhabitants has never been fully appreciated. To defeat the Atreides, we must understand not only Caladan, but Arrakis. One planet soft, and the other a training ground for hard decisions. That was a unique event, that marriage of Atreides and Fremen. We must know how it worked, or we won't be able to match it, let alone defeat it. What does this have to do with Idaho's offer? Wensicia demanded. Faradin glanced pityingly down at his mother. We begin their defeat by the kinds of stress we introduce into their society. That's a very powerful tool, stress, and the lack of it is important, too. Did you not mark how the Atreides helped things grow soft and easy here? Titanic allowed himself a curt nod of agreement. That was a good point. The Sardaukar could not be permitted to grow too soft. This offer from Idaho still bothered him, though. He said, Perhaps it'd be best to reject the offer. Not yet, Wensicia said. We've a spectrum of choices open to us. Our task is to identify as much of the spectrum as we can. My son is right. We need more information. Faradin stared at her, measuring her intent as well as the surface meaning of her words. But will we know when we've passed the point of no alternate choice? He asked. A sour chuckle came from Titanic. If you ask me, we're long past the point of no return. Faradin tipped his head back to laugh aloud. But we still have alternate choices, Tyke. When we come to the end of our rope, that's an important place to recognize. In this age, when the means of human transport include devices which can span the deeps of space in trans-time, and other devices which can carry men swiftly over virtually impassable planetary surfaces, it seems odd to think of attempting long journeys afoot. Yet this remains a primary means of travel on Arrakis, a fact attributed partly to preference, and partly to the brutal treatment which this planet reserves for anything mechanical. In the strictures of Arrakis, human flesh remains the most durable and reliable resource for the Hajj. Perhaps it is the implicit awareness of this fact which makes Arrakis the ultimate mirror of the soul. Handbook of the Hajj. Slowly, cautiously, Ganima made her way back to Tabor, holding herself to the deepest shadows of the dunes, crouching in stillness as the search party passed to the south of her. Terrible awareness gripped her. The worm which had taken the tiger's and Leto's body, the dangers ahead. He was gone. Her twin was gone. She put aside all tears and nurtured her rage. In this, she was pure Fremen.
and she knew this, reveling in it.